This is a Day One podcast extra, bringing you a conversation between our host, Peter Wallace, and a special guest. For more information about Day One, which brings you outstanding preachers from mainline Protestant churches, visit our website at dayone.org.
Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. This is Peter Wallace, and with me today is the Reverend Dr. Anna Carter Florence. Anna is Associate Professor of Preaching at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia, the author of Preaching as Testimony, and the editor or contributor to numerous other books. She's a frequent participant at preaching events, such as the Festival of Homiletics, and she'll be at next year's festival in Minneapolis. Anna, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Peter.
How would you define the task of the preacher? How do you hope, what do you hope happens when you preach? Is it a living thing?
Oh, absolutely. And therefore, incredibly difficult to describe. if I could describe it accurately, I could make my students a whole lot happier because, so many of them come in thinking that we're about to hand them blueprints as though, you know, we're teaching you to plug in your DVD and, or boot your computer up. And it's not that at all. It's really a living art. And it defies a lot of description. So what I've tried doing with the students instead is to begin to think about imperatives, things that need to be in place. Kind of like if you think about the other things that are really important, being a friend, being a good friend to someone. There aren't recipes for that, but there are things. There are certain ways of being that are helpful. So the primary place we begin with our students, and that I think I begin as a preacher, is falling in love with the text. I think if there isn't a deep relationship that goes beyond what you know with this word, it's very difficult to preach it. I become very worried if I find that I'm only explaining a text, because then I'm reducing it to something that's manageable and something within my power, when this is a living word. And so preaching it is entering into a relationship with that living word and with the people to whom and with whom one is preaching. So we start there. Fall in love with the text and, equally as important, fall in love with those to whom you're preaching and with whom you're preaching. You can't preach to people if you don't love them. Otherwise, you're just correcting them. And, loving is not the same as liking. I'm not saying you got to like everybody, but you've got to figure out a way to really, truly love the humanity in these people. Makes it a different kind of a task when you're a guest preacher the way I often am, because I'm not with a body of people regularly. But if you're not able to look out and see this group as the beloved community, it's very difficult to preach.
Well, let me ask you about self-disclosure in preaching. I remember one of the things you said at the Festival of Homiletics this year in Nashville is that God is the subject of our sermons, not the preacher. Where do preachers get off track there? Where's the distinction? Where's the line?
That's a very hard line, and, it just moves around. And the only thing I can say is that you know and the hearers know when you've crossed it. I think any time we begin to preach in order to feel better about or we share something in order to feel better about ourselves or justify something, we're beginning to cross the line. What I try to think about for myself and also for my students is that my job is to stand in a particular place and tell what I see. Now, because of that, there may be some details about me that will come out, and they should. People will hear right away that I'm a woman just because of the sound of my voice. People will know that I live in a particular place, that I live in the construct of a family. They'll know these things about me, but I don't need to share details about my kids or what I had for breakfast. I mean, it's not preaching is not blogging, and that's a really important difference.
Your book from Westminster John Knox, Preaching as Testimony, that indicates that there's some degree of storytelling about your life. What's the major argument of that book?
Well, what I'm trying to do is to think about testimony in its traditional way. The way it's often used among Christians today is, well, let me just tell you the story of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll offer you my testimony. And that's a very important thing. But testimony in its in the legal sense,
right,
is saying what you saw and what you believe it means. So it contains, you could say it has a narration of what you saw and then a confession of what you believe. Now, that's a very different thing, because if that's what you're saying, you're not able to prove what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
There are listeners, there is a jury, there are judges who will have to listen and decide on the truth claim of what you're saying. And that, to me, is a more accurate way of describing preaching. In some way, if we think that what we're offering is a set of stuff that you've just got to take because, you know, I'm in the position of telling you and you better take it, that's not what it is. Our job as preachers is to stand in a particular place in our own lives and in the text and to say what we see and what we believe about it. And people will believe when we are deeply engaged.
I'm curious as to when you teach at the seminary, what do you find is the biggest misconception about preaching that your students bring to the class?
That it's a lot of that there's a lot of faking it involved. I think what they begin to realize is there is no way to fake it as a preacher. if you want to be any good, mm-hmm, or if you want to be faithful would be a better way to say it, that preaching requires every single part of you and who you are. It isn't about your voice. It isn't about your ability to get it right about a text. It isn't about your performance. It isn't about whether you're a really snappy storyteller. It's about none of those things. Because some of the finest, most faithful preachers we know are people who would never make it on, you know, American Idol or any of those. I mean, they just would never do it, you know, mm-hmm, but they speak the truth they know and believe, and that's what makes their preaching so powerful. So the biggest misconception I think we have is that we're going to be, or that students come in with is that, well, you know, I'm not a very strong speaker, or I'm not a good storyteller, or I don't have, you know, great body presence or whatever, and therefore I won't be able to. And you say, no, this is not what it's about. This is about your relationship with the text and these people, and that's a totally different thing. So you can get someone who, you know, maybe was told from the time they were 14 or 15 that they ought to be a preacher because they look or sound a certain way, and they may have a really hard time with the act of preaching and with the relationship that it demands, mm-hmm, between you and the text and you and the people.
Let me ask you a little more global question. You have taught at Columbia for almost 10 years now. You go to numerous preaching conferences and so forth. What would you say is the general state of preaching in the mainline Protestant churches today?
Well, I think it is, first of all, I think it's better than any of us think it is. I think there's a lot of fear out there, and I think there's a lot of extreme fatigue on the part of preachers. I think one of the biggest gifts we could give our preachers is the gift of sabbatical, and maybe one of the biggest gifts our preachers could give congregations would be sharing the task of preaching. I think no one can do it week after week, over and over, year after year. And we may be moving to a point where it's time to be sharing the task with our own people. If I were in the congregation now, I think what I would be on the lookout for is three or four young people who might be open to some mentoring. And I would say to them, you know, I see some gifts in you. I wonder if you'd like to learn to do some preaching and whether you might be wanting to do that with this community, and just work with them on that and invite them to do it, you know, three, four times during the year, And I think that could be generative, not only for the pulpit itself, mm-hmm. but also for preachers who, as I see it, have their biggest challenge being just sheer exhaustion.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do a good bit of writing. Are you working on anything presently?
Well, I am. I'm doing a number of things. I mean, one of the things that I wanted to do for this next year was take on the discipline of, well, it's not preaching every week, but writing about the texts every week. And so mm-hmm. that's why I agreed to be the preaching the text person for lectionary homiletics. And I'm finding that to be a really wonderful thing because it's asking me to not think so broadly about the act of preaching, but just to really think again about texts themselves. And so that's a writing project that I'm enjoying very much.
One of the questions I frequently ask our guests is what books have been meaningful to you in recent days, whether for fun or for study? Anything on your shelf that you'd like to share?
I'm reading a lot of novels right now. Mm-hmm. I am. In fact, I was sharing with you earlier, I'm going to be teaching a course on preaching and youth lately. And so I've been reading a lot of young adult novels, beyond Harry Potter, of course, which I loved. There are quite a number of very fine authors who are writing for teenagers about really big issues, important issues that are big in teenagers' lives, date rape, issues of isolation and popularity, issues of sexuality, all kinds of things. And they're doing it with great sensitivity and truthfulness in a way that the church doesn't always mm-hmm. do and that the church can really learn from. So one of the things I'm going to be doing in this class is asking students to read these books alongside with preaching sermons that would try to have some of that same impact and importance for the lives of teenagers. So I've been doing a lot of reading of those kinds of things, but Harry Potter was definitely my favorite read of the summer.
And what do you do personally to refresh yourself spiritually and physically?
Well, there are two things that I almost can't function if they don't happen every day. The first is I walk. I wish I could walk for hours. I don't have enough time to walk for hours, but I do walk every day, and that's really important time for me. And the other is I knit. And I've actually been a knitter all my life, but I find that knitting is a way that I can manage being in groups, being in times when I have to wait. It's just a wonderful way to completely refocus myself right away.
Wonderful. Anna, thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Peter.